first inch is yesterday. In Excess. Boy, that's a blast from the 80s. The New York City, think about it, of a quarter century ago was wealthy beyond measure and squalid beyond description. Same time. Thus was the setting of the hugely successful novel The Bonfire of the Vanities. The Tom Wolfe classic, published 25 years ago, captured a moment and defined the zeitgeist of America during the Reagan era and well before the internet bubble prosperity of the Clinton years. It tells the story of a greedy white Wall Street trader who accidentally kills a black teenager in the South Bronx, then deliberately flees the scene of the accident. Along the way, we meet a nosy British expat journalist, a media-obsessed Jewish DA, an ambulance-chasing Irish-American defense attorney, a divisive black evangelical pastor, and every New York archetype in between. Does that portrait of America stuck in a greedy street fight of immigrants still hold true today? Thus was the premise of a very interesting project taken on by our longtime friend Alvin Hall, who you may remember as a personal finance expert commenting on the economy many times on The Takeaway. But Hall just completed a five-part series for our partner, the BBC, called Alvin Hall in the Bonfire of the Vanities. It's a terrific listen, by the way, as a radio piece. Alvin Hall joins me in the studio. Alvin, welcome to the program.
I'm glad to be here.
Now, how did you go about doing the sort of literary archaeology here that you would need to do to check in with some of the archetypes and characters who may or may not still be around here in New York?
We read the entire book, and then we looked at all the research, which you can do on the internet these days, to find out who Tom Wolfe had used as the basis for some of the characters. And part of what we wanted to do was not only to look at the people, but how New York City itself had changed, because it was just as much a character in the book as many of the people. So one of the things we were initially curious about was real estate in New York City, especially Park Avenue, where Sherman McCoy lived.
And, of course, so the best person to talk to there is Barbara Corcoran.
Indeed.
Who runs the Corcoran Group, one of the big real estate. I mean, 25 years ago, she was a big player, but more of
Absolutely.
A broker. The Corcoran Group now is one of the biggest developers in the city. Listen to what she said.
If you were truly a master of the universe and you had the bucks to pay for it, which at that time was roughly $2.5 to $3 million, but you know you needed one other credential to get into those buildings. You needed the blue bloodline, and Sherman had it. One thing to have the money to afford it, something else to be accepted by these very snooty boards, and he was accepted because of his bloodline.
Now, the rules for getting on Park Avenue 25 years ago, probably not much changed today. Is that your verdict?
No, it's changed hugely today.
Really?
Yes. Barbara pointed out that you had to add another zero to the value of those apartments. So
there
now
is that.
They would be 20 to 30 million.
Right.
And all of the old WASPs who used to live there are gone because they can't afford it anymore. The maintenance has gone up. The buildings needed renovation. So now those buildings are populated with new money, especially money from Wall Street and the new businesses that came up in America in the 80s and 90s. So that whole era has changed. And now you have to have not only money, you have to have even more money, sometimes 3 to 5 times the value of the apartment in liquid assets just to get through the door.
So have we reached the moment in New York where Lloyd Blankfein can live in the same building as Jay-Z?
Probably. However, the board would have to look at Jay-Z and Lloyd to determine which one would come with the worst press attention.
I sense a sequel for Tom Wolfe, although I imagine he's considered and rejected the idea. Well, the Bonfire of the Vanities, of course, is all about the South Bronx.
Yes.
And, you know, who did you speak with in the South Bronx to get an idea?
We talked to David Gonzalez, who's a writer for the New York Times.
Brilliant journalism.
And he just made great statements. But the interview that still stays with me is the interview with Majora Carter.
You talked to Majora?
Yes.
She hosted this show, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, for a while. Yeah, she's brilliant.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. And she's one of those, you know, sometimes you go to do an interview and you think it's going to be one thing, but it's so great.
Well, she has an extraordinary perspective of what's happened in the 25 years since.
I watched most of the buildings in my neighborhood burn down. I had a brother who was killed in the drug wars in a neighborhood over from mine. I saw this neighborhood on the nightly news enough to know that nothing good was from here or could come of this place.
Now, like Barbara Corcoran, Majora Carter was someone who helped to change everything there.
Yes, she became an environmental activist after she graduated from high school. She went off to Wesleyan University, and she thought about it and came back. And there's this great moment that just echoes in my mind when I ask her, if I got off that same term that Sherman McCoy got off today, and would I say, oh, the South Bronx, I never thought it looked like this. She said, you wouldn't even think that. She said, and if I have anything to do with it, when you get off that turn, there will be a greenway waiting for you. You'll think it's beautiful. And the absolute certainty with which she said this still stays with me today. It was amazing. But during that time when she was growing up, we have to remember who was mayor of New York during that time.
Right, right, right. Well, the amazing thing about this whole documentary is the ability that people had to just completely unburden themselves to you. I mean, you got so much great stuff, and none better from, of course, Ed Koch, the mayor of New York from 1978 to 1989. Is he actually in the book, Koch?
No, he's not in the book, and he doesn't think that he's a character in the book at all.
But, of course, he is a character. Listen.
Yes.
In those days, many people, myself included, didn't have much faith in the courts.
Why?
Well, they were just overwhelmingly politically driven, and you could pick your judge if you were politically connected. But that's not true today.
I heard this soundbite in your
yes.
documentary for the BBC, and I went, he believes Bonfire of the Vanities is a documentary.
He did. He said that it captured New York at that period, both the corruption of New York, and he talked extensively about the theater associated with the press. And he believes that the press has not changed one bit. Hmm. They enjoy a great story. They build up the great story. And he talked about how he would use the press in a way to support his aims as mayor of the city.
So everything's changed, according to Koch, except for the press. Why do you want to be a part of the press, Alvin?
Well, I hope I'm not building up stuff like that. But he was a very interesting mayor, Koch. He said that if he had been a character or the basis of a character in the book, he would be honored. But he said, no, that was not him at all.
There are plenty of people that you spoke with who didn't think things had changed that much, who could imagine themselves in Bonfire of Their Vanities in 2012.
Exactly. And the big one for me was Ken Montgomery, a lawyer who has never lost a case in the South Bronx. Mm. He is charismatic in a way you just can't believe today. We met him outside of a courthouse in Lower Manhattan where he was between cases. And he just talked so honestly and frankly about how things have not changed.
And did that dishearten you? Did that surprise you? Or
I think he sees it from a different point of view. He sees all of the incidents that are in the news today about young black and Hispanic men being stopped by the police, the stop and frisk thing. He sees the Dominique Strauss-Kahn case that recently happened.
Sure.
All as a part of the continuation of the same underlying issues that exist in Bonfire of the Vanities about the disenfranchised versus the moneyed people.
Now, there are people who you spoke with who can see themselves almost identically or exactly in the book. Ed Hayes was the model for the Irish defense lawyer in Bonfire of the Vanities. Let's listen to him.
Of course, the police department was drawn from a much different element of society. They were almost exclusively Italian and Irish, very few women, very few minorities. They were all tough guys, very heavily. I mean, not all of them, but the percentage of them that went out and made all the arrests were genuine tough guys. They'd fight you.
What do you think of what Ed Hayes had to say?
I think he saw it up close and personal. And he was an ambitious young lawyer, and he saw both the corruption of the system and how the system worked to get rid of all of the crime that was around. And he said it was unfair, but he didn't feel there were many choices at all.
You know, 25 years ago, Al Sharpton was a on-the-ground activist. He's still an activist, but he's
yes.
a big TV star. Did you talk to him?
We wanted to talk to him because he was supposedly the model for yeah. Reginald Bacon in the
yeah.
book. But he was evasive. You know, I've interviewed a lot of people. It was harder to get to Al Sharpton than it was for me to get to Jay-Z.
You know,
says a lot.
That does say a lot. And that says a lot about the transformation over the last 25 years.
Yes. Ken Montgomery said that a lot of the civil rights activists from 25 years ago are now part of the establishment, and they no longer want to take the same risk that they once took. So I can understand why Sharpton, although he kept saying he would let us interview him, it kept being delayed and delayed and delayed until eventually he was on a plane.
Yeah, Sharpton's got an entourage. You don't have an entourage, do you, Alvin?
No.
This series has aired in the UK. Is it going to air here in the United States?
We're hoping helping it will air here in the UK. It got great reviews in the UK. It was exciting. And I love what it says about New York today and the look back at the future.
Alvin Hall
look back at the past.
Looked back at the bonfire in the Vanities and tried to find out if it's still true today as it was 25 years ago. And Tom Wolfe wrote the book. He's the host of the BBC series, Alvin Hall in the Bonfire of the Vanities. Alvin, thanks so much and congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Ed from New York responded to this story on thetakeaway.org. A wonderful picture of New York City in the late 80s, right down to the headlines. I wonder if Wall Street valueless bonds traded a decade later, which harmed the economy so much, can be seen in the culture of bonfire. Any of those bonds come due in the time that the book's been published?
Oh, yes. 25 years ago.
Alvin would know about it. I'm John Hockenberry. Celeste Headlee will be back tomorrow. This is The Takeaway. I've got to let you know.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.